praise be to Jeff of House Johns, the first of his name, God Emperor of DC, Lord of the Super 7 Justice League, and super producer of TV and film. May he guide all his subjects from King Tom to us lowly reading peasants to glory. In the year of our Lord 2016, we shall thus name it Jeff Johns Rebirth.
Praise be unto Aquaman.
Praise be unto the Green Lantern.
And with that, welcome to the Z2 Podcast, episode 20. Whole Big 20 two episodes. Wow, we did it. We have done it.
5 months in the making.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. We're almost halfway through a year of this. It's going to be bizarre.
It's almost August. By the time you're listening to this, it is August.
Yeah, it will be August.
Oh my goodness.
Holy crap. But yeah, we actually tried to find anything to talk about this week, and I think we have some good stuff lined up.
All at the last minute.
Yeah, thank God stuff actually happened. So the Jeff Johns hymn, as we have referred to it, is because Jeff Johns was announced president of DC Entertainment.
President and chief creative officer.
So he still retains his old title, and he's still answering to... I believe her name's Nelson, who runs all of DC still, but it's kind of interesting to see like how much power will, or not necessarily power, but what else will this allow him to do?
Yeah, because it's funny, us talking about Rebirth last week, we were going on about how Jim Lee and Dan Didio were just sitting there. It's like, Jeff Johns, tell us everything that made DC great and how we can build. And now Jeff Johns is like accelerated his growth from, you know, a fan to a writer, to creative officer, to chief creative officer, to working on the movies.
Literally touching everything.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy when Batman finally comes out, starring Batman, directed by Batman, written by Batman, and Jeff Johns.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. Jeff Johns has made it big.
He's pretty much like revived DC, it seems, from what, everything I've been like told to me, like the mid, like early to mid 2000s was like a really bad time for DC stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like since Jeff Johns jumped on, he's really like rebuilt everything.
Yeah. Bleeding Cool articles still announce like the top selling things for DC. The top selling comics for each week has been like DC and Star Wars titles. Civil War kind of peaks. But DC has been taking this usurp. And even Dan Didio came out and said they're like an unknown territory right now because of how well Rebirth is doing.
Yeah.
And they really want to make sure that they keep delivering from a month-to-month basis.
Yeah. And it's kind of terrible, but all the jokes that people made are when the announcement was made is just like, is Jeff Johns going to fire Dan Didio now? It's just like, I get that you guys don't like him. That's really harsh.
I don't think Dan Didio and Jim Lee report to Johns, though.
No, I believe all three of them still report to Nelson.
Yeah.
I think this just gives Johns a little more, like, say over things that happen at DC now, instead of just like, hey, this is my input, this is what I'd like to do, but now it actually gives them, like, the stance of, like, we are going to do this.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'm really excited to see what it all brings. Because, I mean, they literally bringing back, like, classic stuff, like Hugo Strange, the Monster Men, things that, you know, appeared in Golden Age comics and that are now coming up to the modern day world. It's like, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah. Like bringing back some of that new old stuff with that new twist. Seems like that's kind of the main mantra of Rebirth is bring back the old, but refresh it with the new.
So you could say it's all new and all different.
Yeah.
But it's not.
It's not.
But
it's been good.
Yeah.
Still going strong, it seems. Like, I've heard a lot of people that are like, yeah, this has been really, like, Green Arrow seems like it's still, people are still really enjoying that, and they're on that train still
for a bit. Well, it's insane that issues 2 and 3 are outselling issue 1, which doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's kind of, you figured it would peter off, but it seems like it's actually holding on to people, or people are excited to see what's happening with it.
Yeah.
I really like it, too.
Oh, yeah. When we were at Hall of Justice, I saw, like, Batman print number 3. So it's like they have a very high print number, but it's just like the fans keep eating it, which is crazy.
Which is a really good sign that it's not just that whole first month, like, oh, all the number ones, we got to get all those. It's actually like stories are actually good. The writing's good. It's actually holding on to people.
Mm-hmm.
That's always a good sign. So this is really the only like non-comic book news that we'll be really talking about or comic book related. But HBO did officially confirm that season 8 of Game of Thrones will be the final season. It was kind of already speculated that season 7 and 8 were going to be like two shorter seasons, but they didn't say how long each season was going to be. So maybe they'll stick with their 10 episode thing, give it 20 more episodes, call it good.
6 episodes in a movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of expected at this point. Like everyone's been like, yeah, the story is like, it's finally building up to see how it's going to all come together and conclude.
HBO gonna have after Game of Thrones ends? They have like The Wire, Silicon Valley still.
Silicon Valley has been really good from what people tell me.
True Detective hasn't gone on season 3 yet.
No, they haven't done anything of that. I think they have another show that's coming or they're trying to get going. Can't remember what it's called though. But yeah, I mean, I think from like one of the producer standpoints, they're like, yeah, we'd love to give the show like 10 seasons if they wanted to, but all the heads of it are like, no, this is how we want to end the show. We want it to end at season 8. So it's like, they respect it.
I wonder if they're going to bring on another team of writers and do like a prequel season.
That's what everyone wants them to do. Is just like, we've seen stuff with like young Ned Stark and like, but it'd be really cool to see like a rebellion season or like series.
Right.
Like just all the prequels.
Well, that was the original pitch for Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
HBO didn't take it.
Yeah. It was like, we're going to have this lead up all this prequel stuff for the books. It'll be great. Like, nah. Like, okay, we're just going to do a series about the books.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good. But yeah, I'm very much like, I love the show now. Like, I was very like, everyone keeps talking about this, but I'm not really onto it. I didn't watch until season 3. So,
and I stopped at season 3. I just didn't have time.
Yeah. At season 6 is just like, I am really excited to see how they end this now that they're they have their own direction that they're taking with it.
Right.
Since they've diverted from the books. But yeah.
It'll be interesting.
It will. So Doctor Strange officially starts the MCU multiverse.
Yeah, that was one of the headlines I saw the producer was talking about. This is the point officially in Marvel where they're saying, yeah, there's a multiverse that exists, and we get to see Doctor Strange go into it. And in the preview, it shows, like, New York City, and then alternate dimension New York City, which is, like, broken glass and shiny CGI.
So that's where all the CGI stuff
is
really. He's going into alternate dimensions.
A lot of that is. And the reason why I put it there is that it seems to me it actually opens a lot of gateways for other things. Kind of like how old school DC.
Ultimates?
Yeah.
Ultimate Universe?
Or how, like, old school DC, their whole thing was, not old school, but, like, mid-2000s, the Wildstorm universe just had, like, a portal in the DC universe that they could just cross between at any point in time. So, like, the Gen 13 worked with the Teen Titans at one point, and then some other superheroes showed up in the Wildstorm universe. But I think this is a perfect backdoor to whenever they get the rights to other characters to bring them into the fold.
Right.
And it's like, well, everyone knows who Wolverine is, so we could just squeeze him through this portal thanks to Doctor Strange, and then he's in the next Avengers movie.
Yeah.
Or like you said,
all the loopholes to bring other characters in.
Or like you said, like an Ultimate Universe movie. Or my hopes is that they just show 3 Spider-Men at once during Infinity War would be really cool.
Yeah, just to have them there and explain nothing. It's just like, why the hell were there 3 Spider-Men? What does this mean?
The reality gem is breaking everything.
Spooky.
Yeah, it's curious that, again, I'm still curious that what is the point of them trying to establish a multiverse when they're in like phase 3 of their film franchise? Because it seems like from this point, you know, everyone's contract ends. Mm-hmm. The Avengers is supposed to be like the last movie.
Yeah, Avengers 4, which is untitled, since Avengers 3 is now retitled Infinity War. But even though both movies are going to conclude the same or deal with the same event, they're going to be titled differently. So they're throwing away the whole part 1, part 2 crap,
mm-hmm.
which I kind of appreciate because that's Seems like everybody's just kind of done with the whole part one, part two thing. It's just like, no, give us a full freaking movie. Let's have the conclusion.
Look, I sat through 3 hours of Batman versus Superman. Just tack on another hour. Give me a Red Bull with my admission ticket. I'll be okay.
Sure.
Just be hopped up.
Just keep you going throughout the whole thing.
Have you ever done a butt-numathon?
A what?
A butt-numathon.
Isn't that just watch like a whole series of movies?
Yeah. Alamo Drafthouse does it every year.
Oh,
and
no.
It's 24 hours of movies.
I really don't think I could do it.
So sometimes they show like older movies, like there's like a specific director in mind, but like the one time that I went, I fell asleep.
Like, yeah, I feel like midway through, fall asleep.
And then I woke up as they were doing like special screening of Ant-Man using only unfinished CGI.
What?
And it was just like, well, it wasn't like the entire thing of Ant-Man, but like a specific scene where he's riding on all of the ants.
Interesting.
And I think that's when, what's his name? Not James Gunn. Freaky Deaky, the original director, was still attached to the movie. Yeah, when Edgar Wright was still attached to the franchise. Because, again, you know, Marvel movies are really cookie cutter. They don't want to hear everyone's special vision of the film.
Right, they just want it to be done.
We just need this character for Captain America. So just give him an origin story, kill off his villain, and then we can move on.
Yeah.
Thanks. But I want to make Ant-Man great. Right.
Nope.
We don't want you to.
We have an agenda. We have to do this.
Sorry, I'm eating my mic next. Well, speaking of which, not Kevin Feige, but another person from like the Marvel Entertainment Studios came out and said the only reason that the TV show characters will not cross over into the movies is because of scheduling conflicts. It's like, yeah, you know, with movies, it's this really long-term project, but with TV shows, we can pump the TV show out, sit on it, then release it. But it's like, okay, but
so
how does that...
So if you're saying the TV show's done, why can't they be in the movie then?
Yeah, it's like, why can't you just sit on Luke Cage for like... Or, you know, if you're filming Luke Cage already and then Civil War is being filmed right now, take a few days off, have Luke Cage appear in Civil War. Like, again, there's so many small
points. It sounds like... PR bullshit of just like, we don't have a good excuse, so just scheduling conflicts or conflicts of interest.
Yeah. I mean, man, it's just, it bothers me though, because again, there's so many really cool opportune times for these characters to appear in like a cameo. Like, I mean, Wolverine in Apocalypse was on screen for like 5 minutes and then he left. We were
killed
cool with
people.
That.
It's like, oh, nice. Old Man Logan's next.
Or how Avengers, you know, during the Chitauri War in New York. Man, some of these other characters could have been there in super quick cameo appearances.
Yeah, like Jessica Jones could have just been, like, down a back alley punching aliens or something.
Even though that was never planned.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, it's very cool, small, simple things that they could do to appease the fan base as a whole. All we want to do is see these characters, you know, be acknowledged.
Like, you have this whole universe set up, like... We want to see them together. At least it's different with like the DC shows that they've made a very defined line. It's like, no, this is the TV universe. This is the movie verse. We're not going to cross them over. And Marvel's kind of already screwed themselves on that because they've already referenced like events that have happened in the movies in the TV shows. So it's like, why can't we have the crossover?
Why can't we see Charlie Cox be like in a courtroom when the announcement of Ultron's happening.
Yeah, just something. Just like a call out.
Yep. But we get our Stan Lee cameo every movie, and then all the fans clap.
Yep.
It's like, hey, I get it, the joke.
He's in a strip club this time.
Yeah. Good times.
Speaking of Marvel TV shows, it's very sad. We talked about it last week. We're like, when is Jessica Jones season 2 going to happen? Well, according to Netflix, it's not going to happen until 2018. Just like... God damn it. That was my favorite
one. Well, same with Daredevil season 3.
Yeah, but Daredevil's already had season 2.
Yeah, but it seems like, again, the case of building up to Defenders, they have the solo series of Luke Cage, solo series of Iron Fist, and then Defenders. So that's like 2-3 possible TV shows for the 2017 block.
I guess.
Late 2016, early 2017. But, you know... There's no use in being mad about it.
Yeah, we don't have control of it. It's just a little upsetting.
Yeah. Well, you can always watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with Ghost Rider, and Joss Whedon now says that they have the rights to use, like, classic Inhumans. So maybe we get to see Karnak or
Black Bolt. That'd be kind of cool.
I feel like Lady Medusa would be too much CGI.
That'd be a lot of CGI.
Maybe we just get to see Lockjaw. Like, that's their entire budget.
Just a dog. Lockjaw. They could do a dog. It wouldn't be that hard.
He's a dog.
He's a dog. Won't be that hard. Oh, yeah. So we got to see our first look of Kara and Clark together on Supergirl Season 2. The first promo image, it made Clark look very tiny.
Yeah, no one likes the promo image, but...
But then, like, the actual, like, shots of him, like...
He looks bigger.
Yeah, he actually looks, like, pretty buff.
Yeah, he looks tiny next to Kara, but then when, like, those leaked photos came out, I'm like, okay, that looks more like Superman.
I think Melissa Benoist is, like, 5'9", so she's actually pretty tall.
Yeah.
The promo image is, like, Kara could totally kick your ass.
Yeah. You don't look like Clark.
There was one of the comments I saw of the actual, like the leaked images of, not really leaked, but the images of him, like, in action.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's like, this actually looks like Superman's on the street, like, fighting crime. This is actually kind of cool.
Yeah. It's crazy now that we actually get more of that CW universe, too.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Barry's going to have different memories in Flash Season 3, which that's going to be kind
of
weird.
See, I feel like, speaking of that, I feel like the crossover episode is literally just going to be them fixing the Flashpoint timeline. Yeah, fixing
everything.
Like, Barry's going to appear in the Supergirl universe. It's like, I need your help. I messed up. And then they do, like, a cascade travel around each thing trying to fix stuff.
Have you met my cousin?
Yeah. They showed a promo image of Clark with Jimmy, too.
Oh, really?
Walking side by side. I'm like,
that's kind of cool.
Weird that I'm seeing this again. I haven't seen something like this in Smallville.
Yeah. It looks cool. I might try to get back into Supergirl now that they're kind of building up to it and they're actually, like, trying to give it a lot of work.
Yeah.
So
they're trying to give it as much attention as they can. I think they're re-airing the episodes right now on CW.
I think they're all on the CW app, too.
Yeah, The Seed.
Yeah.
Vixen Season 2 is coming.
Yep. It's still kind of weird that they're doing the animated show and then also a live-action part at the same time.
Yeah.
This is kind of weird in terms of, like, the timeline that they're doing it in.
Because it's like, well, I understand the cartoon because you get to do a lot more. You get to have,
it's easier to show all her powers.
Yeah, and then, like, Arrow happened. But then she's also going to be Legends of Tomorrow as another incarnation of the Vixen character for Season 2, along with the JSA and the Legion of Doom. So that'll be cool.
Yeah. Haven't seen the Legion of Doom for some time.
Meanwhile in the swamp.
Meh. Pretty sure someone in there goes meh.
I think that was like a Robot Chicken sketch.
It could have been. I don't know.
There's
a lot of joking about the Legion of Doom. Yeah, that's really all the TV movie news we got this week. Really, nothing happened.
Look, guys. DC or SDCC happened last weekend.
So
everyone else is radio silent this week.
No one has got anything. So Tony Stark's mother was revealed, and you tagged one of the stupid clickbait titles.
I thought it was funny.
I
knew you were in the document.
I absolutely hate those things.
You were in the document, and I was going to write.
I saw
Tony Stark's mother is revealed. But, this weekend, International Iron Man, it was the big reveal. It had a really cool payoff because a lot of it was at the start of the issue, you get the death of Howard Stark and Tony just sitting there.
Was it Bucky murdering him again?
No, but it's him and old school Nick Fury at the funeral, and Tony's drinking. He's like, well, you know, your father has done a lot to protect you. He loved you. And Tony, you know, just never had that good relationship with his father. He says, no, he never loved me. He was an asshole. And it's like, really? The man who jumped on top of you to shield you from bullets? It's like, he ruined my life. And then it flashes forward to Tony talking to this terrorist who he met in college who he loved and everything. And that was the person his father didn't want him associating with because she worked for Hydra. Hail. And so they're talking about it. And it's like, look, you knew you might know my mother. I need to know who she is. Have you ever thought about me? You know, just trying to buy his time, trying to get this information. Then Friday comes, hacks into their system, destroys the mandroids that are trying to destroy. They're trying to kill Tony, and then like his former love interest escapes and all that jazz. And then Tony gets this notice from the orphanage saying they found something. So it's like there are three. There are three files that the men from the secret agency took. One of them was probably yours, but we kept the mother's files in a black box. And so they open it, and just the stupid panel. As he's opening the folder, he's like, please don't be Red Skull. Please don't be Red Skull. Please don't be Red Skull. And I was like, oh, I giggle. And it's just like this average Joe. It's this average woman named Amanda. And Tony just sits there. It's like, I believe you might be my mother. And then the issue ends there. Really hard cut.
Is that the last International Ironman? Or is there...
There's going to be...
Does that go up till...
I think it goes relaunch. Up until relaunch. So it's really cool that Tony finally gets to see that his mother, who his mother is, and she's like this average person, as far as we know, and not Black Widow, thankfully.
Thank God. Thank God.
But it's cool. And I'm looking forward to... At first, I was kind of miffed at the whole concept of the Starks not being Tony's parents, that when Kieran Gillen did his run. Mm-hmm. But it left a really interesting hole to fill when Bendis took over for International Iron Man. And it seems like he really wants to develop Tony as much as he can
as before Civil War ends.
Yep. So it's really cool. And it's going to, I believe this is going to set up all the way till Dr. Doom coming in, because the team from International is going to move over into Infamous.
Right.
So it's cool. Some people are like, oh, that was lackluster. I'm like, well, what did you expect?
Right. Did you really want it to be tied to some character?
Yeah.
Like, we don't need another big reveal like that, because then it just feels forced.
The one thing I don't want is his mother to flip a gun at him. Just like another one of those Jason Todd scenarios where he finds out his real mother, and then his real mother is working with the Joker.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Please give me like a low-key issue to kind of enjoy while the rest of Civil War is happening.
Like, the whole... not really the reveal, but the whole way that Thor... current unworthy Thor, like, was on his quest to figure out who the new Thor was the whole time. Like, that was like, I felt like that was really well done, because he's going to people, he's questioning them, trying to get where they come from. He's just like, it's got to be Ross Solomon, it's got to be. And then she shows up, is like, oh, hey, how's it going?
Where have you been? I've been on a mission. Then who are you?
I gotta go.
Yeah, I'm not ready for Jane to leave. Yeah, but she's just such an interesting character. She's
developed into a really, like, I feel like she like understands what Thor means more than the original Thor did.
Yeah.
Or at least she's understood it faster than he ever did.
Well, after all the crap Odinson went through.
Yeah.
Did you hear the new theory?
No.
The new theory about, like, the whole Odinson and the unworthy Thor thing is that what Nick Fury whispered to Thor on the moon was that the real Thor is dead and Odin created you. Hence the name Odin's son.
Oh,
rather than him being like the real Thor. So I just saw that theory on Reddit. Like,
that'd be kind of crazy. Because, I mean, Odin's already on like a power trip right now. Mm-hmm. Or he has been for some time.
And that's why, you know, he thinks he has so much control over the hammer and everything else.
And then, oh man, it'd be kind of... I can imagine it. I can see it now, like, since the two arcs, Mighty Thor and Unworthy Thor, are going to eventually collide. That once Thor learns this, or he finally accepts it, or Odinson, he bands with Jane Foster. And they're like, we have to take out Odin. And then maybe Jane dies in the process or something, or...
And then Thor gets two hammers.
I am unbeatable.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see.
It'd be kind of a cool...
It's one of those really weird
war on Asgard or something.
Hey, that sounds like a Marvel event where all the Marvel heroes fight each other.
Except it's just contained within Asgard.
Hopefully.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So that was, it was just a cool thing I saw on Reddit. A lot of people were like, oh, that'd be really cool.
That would be a cool little arc. I feel like that would be a really well done arc by Jason Aaron, too.
Yeah. Like he's been building.
Yeah.
Since
it's just like what was whispered? It's been sitting there for years. Literal Hydra. Years. It was Hail Hydra. I hope there's a meme of that somewhere once
there it is. Gets released. There was
when was there?
The Captain America thing happened.
Nice. So speaking of, I guess, kind of writers doing stuff, Gail Simone has confirmed on Twitter this last week that she's writing a Marvel or DC superhero book that she's never written before. So let the speculation fly of what the hell that could be.
What would you like to see her on?
Oh, man, that's kind of hard. I'd love to see her do Mockingbird, since that's getting canned, but I feel like they're not going to do that. I think that would be really cool. Oh, man, what? So many characters. Maybe she's written Black Canary before, so she couldn't do a Black Canary solo book. What do you think it could be?
My hopes is Zatanna.
Ooh, that would be really cool.
Like, she writes either a Zatanna solo book, that way she can use Black Canary because they're best friends, or some sort of dark, mystic universe kind of stuff.
She's kind of leaned towards that with Secret Six. Yeah. Like, with the whole Black Alice and the magic universe, like, being sucked away.
Well, I just feel like she'd do really well. Like, her sense of style would be really strong in that horror aspect universe.
That's kind of what she's been writing recently.
Mm-hmm.
What could she write from Marvel that she hasn't done before?
She's done Wolverine. She's done Deadpool. She gets the all-new, all-female X-Men team.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'd be all for that.
I think G. Willow Wilson did that in the before All New, All Different happened. She got, like, the last arc of X-Men.
Okay. I'm trying to think of all the characters that she loves that she hasn't written before.
Cyclops. Just give her the Cyclops
book. It's the Cyclops book where she's just shitting on him the whole time.
He gets killed in the first page and someone else
becomes
Cyclops.
That's it. That's the book. I don't know. There's so many speculation because she hasn't given any hints towards it. It's just one of the big two, which could literally be anything.
Yeah.
And she's written so many characters that, like you said, it could be just some, not even necessarily like B-level, but just like some character we haven't seen for a really long time that we haven't thought about.
Yeah. See, I'm just leaning to like the style that she's currently embracing. Like, she has that really strong horror aspect.
Yeah, she's been doing horror a lot recently.
And there's a lot of comedy.
A Mad Hatter book.
She's written a Mad Hatter.
That's true, though.
Secret Six.
Yeah. She would be the one to ever write a Mad Hatter solo book, though, if there were to be one. I don't know. It's really hard to know because we have little. It could be anyone. There's no hints, no clues. Just it's one of these two guys.
Yeah. Like I said, I feel like a Zatanna book would be really fun for her because she is a humorous character. She can embrace like that darkness of the magic universe. Or she could go on over to Marvel and do something.
I don't know.
Wiccan solo book.
I feel it'd be kind of cool if she did an Angela book.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Back. I think she'd do really
Angela
well
Angela is back, though. She's in.
She's with Guardians now,
And Vote Loki.
Oh, yeah. As a bodyguard for whatever reason.
Poor Angela.
Yeah. She deserves a lot better. She deserves the Kieran Gillen and Neil Gaiman status again.
And Marguerite Bennett.
Yeah. But speaking of Kieran Gillen, he also, I saw this today, he is writing a new Marvel series that he has done before. So I pulled up all the Marvel series that he's written, and the most notable ones are Uncanny X-Men in 2011 and 2012, and he did write some Beta Ray Bill back in the day.
Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah.
That's the big reveal. Odinson's actually Beta Ray Bill.
Surprise. He did write Iron Man, like you said. I don't think it's going to be... Obviously, I don't think it could be Iron Man.
Nope.
Unless he brought somehow...
Three Iron Man books at the same time.
Four. Let's bring back Tony Stark again. And the one I really hope for is... I really hope he brings Young Avengers back.
You're forgetting the most important one.
Which is?
Yeah, I'm showing my mic next still.
Angela? He's already done that.
Journey into Mystery.
Oh, yeah. I saw that pass. But that was... That's part of Thor.
Yeah, but Journey into Mystery was more than just Thor. That was Loki. That was Thor. That was, like, the entire Asgardian system.
Right.
So if he's...
It's part of Fear itself.
Yeah, if he can bring, I think Journey into Mystery ran into like the 800s, so it'd be really cool to see him relaunch Journey into Mystery featuring Loki. That way he can do like, oh, let's bring Angela, oh, let's bring Odinson.
Yeah, I mean, that would be, yeah, that would be a good way to build up the whole Thor verse again if they want to do that.
Or give him like,
or maybe runaways. He is, maybe he will be doing the one of the unsolicited X-Men titles that they keep talking about.
Yeah,
he could be bringing that back.
It'd be cool to see him do Runaways.
Yeah, that's why I really want to, part of that's really want him to do Young Avengers again.
Yeah,
like I would love to see that.
Yeah, the Choosing Sides that came out this week, number 3, was just it's a Young Avengers reunion.
Oh, yes.
It's really cool because they're all there for Kate. They're like, we know you're going through a hard time. Let us help you.
Yeah.
And Pizza Dog is in the issue.
Yes.
All of the Young
Pizza
Avengers.
Pizza Dog. I miss Pizza Dog. I hope Pizza Dog's in the Hawkeye book again.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope he comes back with Kate. Yeah. I'm just glad he's writing another thing.
Joke's on you. It's actually Darth Vader again.
Surprise. Arc 2. I had some more story I wanted to write, so.
This one's about Darth Vader's TIE Fighter days.
Yep. Just flying around in space.
It's
what was Generation Hope?
That was an X-Men book.
Okay, so yeah, more X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
that was after the Messiah Complex.
It really seems like it could be Young Avengers, Thor, or X-Men. One of those three. Or tied to one of those three. Because he's never written Runaways before.
No.
So it would have to be Young Avengers if it was going to be something like that.
That's fair.
Because he did say it's something he's written before.
But he's written a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's written a lot of stuff. But that's kind of where I'm leaning towards, is one of those three is probably what he's going
to
be writing.
I love to see him in the Journey into Mystery.
Yeah,
because
be cool.
He's just dicking around so much in Wickdiv with like the whole magic and gods aspect. It'd be really cool to see
the
Marvel one.
Yeah, it'd be kind of interesting to see what he does with all that. Yeah.
My nose itches.
What?
My nose itches.
Oh. Yeah, I'm going to get some in my eye. I'm trying to get out. Civil War issue 4 was out, and I'm so just upset with fucking Carol Danvers right now. It's like, why are you
Hawkeye
doing this?
Acquitted, though, of all
yeah,
charges.
That was, I was like, Clint, I don't think you deserve that. I like you. I really do, but you fucked up, man. You fucked up.
But it's a mercy killing, which may or may not be legal.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing, is just like, everyone's like, oh, thank God, the Hulk's gone. We don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, which is just garbage.
But the whole Jennifer scene, that was brutal. Like,
so, yeah,
just seeing her eyes, like, shift into the green.
Well, she's not green anymore. She's gray.
Oh, yeah.
Did you notice that?
I did notice that. I was like, what kind of
it's like a regression.
But her eyes just turned bright green.
Yeah, so we had a red She-Hulk. She turned red for a while, so I guess this regression into gray will be really interesting because that version of the Hulk is, like, sheer anger. It's crazy too.
I mean, you could even see the anger building in her. Mm-hmm. I was like, is she about to Hulk out right now?
Yeah. And then for whatever reason, she's going to have swords in Marvel now.
Why the fuck not?
Yeah. Just poor.
What to make She-Hulk more menacing? Give her swords.
It's not garbage, but it's like, it's really cold. The fact that Carol is the one that's going to tell her what happens. I feel like that whole situation right there is going to lead to more trouble than Tony's side of the argument even needs.
I mean, it makes sense that she would tell her, though, because Carol was one of her closest friends.
Right.
And she was there when she almost died. It's like she's the one who to tell her what happened.
But she's going to blame it on Tony.
Yeah.
Which she did.
I'm just so upset by everyone's actions. Like, especially in that room where Tony gathered everyone. It's like, you have the chance to fix all of this, and you don't.
I was telling you this in, like, the car this week. Just saying, like, you know, every single Marvel tie-in has pitched Carol in, like,
a negative way.
In a negative fashion, except for, like, the Captain Marvel book itself. Even the characters.
But I want to argue, like, even in then, there's been a lot of the side characters are in her own book that are like, I don't know if this is the right way to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell that she's losing her damn mind over everything that's happened to her.
Yeah.
Like, she's just under too much. Well, she's not like, making good decisions at
that's
all.
That's what Steve brought up, too. It's like, you know, she's hurt over Rhodey, too.
Yeah.
And then Tony's
it was
like...
I think it was Steve who brought that up.
That's what I said.
I heard Tony. I think you said Tony.
Steve told Tony.
Oh, Steve told Tony.
Yeah, he's like, she's hurt over Rhodey, too. And then Tony's like, yeah, but that doesn't justify any of her actions.
It doesn't justify a lot of yours, either, early on.
He goes back to, like, way back when we first started everything, like, what we learned from Minority Report, if that exists in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
But it's very much, it's like, you, it's
profiling. It's also affecting Ulysses, or talking about, like, how Ulysses is affected by everything, too.
Yeah, we brought it up last week.
Yeah, how his powers are... He's literally, like, he's picturing the worst-case scenario of everything.
And,
Tony brought that up in the issue.
He picks up the worst-case scenario because he takes in everyone's energy. So if he's surrounded by negative energy, it's going to trigger into, like, a negative conflict. And I sent you that image from Karnak. No. From Civil War Ulysses. It's like a prequel to the Civil War conflict where Karnak is like, stress is a trigger to your powers.
Mm-hmm.
You need to learn how to control that stress. And it's showing now more than ever that Ulysses isn't always right. And it's funny because the woman that they locked up.
Yeah, that's the part that frustrated me so much, because I'm like, Carol, stop it. Please stop it.
The woman that they locked up, though, they told her that she's a deep undercover Hydra agent. You know who's a deep undercover Hydra agent? Steve Rogers.
Currently.
And it kind of worried me because the whole time that Tony was like monologuing, I thought he was talking like himself or like the audience. And then it pans over
to
the room.
Everybody.
And I'm like, but the first person that caught my eyes was Steve. I'm like, oh shit, he's telling Steve, the Hydra agent, everything. And then I saw like Medusa and Beast and everyone else. But at the same time, it's very much like, yeah, Tony, you just brought everything to light. You damn well should go public with this, because what Carol's doing is not good. I can only imagine how Tony is feeling after they went to Steve Rogers, of all people, to help them try and solve something.
Mm-hmm.
And Carol shuts them both down. And it's like, you do not go against Steve Rogers. That is a Marvel no-no.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like the whole time I'm reading it, I literally type my issue it's one of those things, is like, I love Carol Danvers so much. I love Kelly Sue. Like, that's what brought me to love the character so much. And like, even the first arc of Captain Marvel, this latest Captain Marvel, was still pretty solid. But it's just so frustrating seeing one of my favorite Marvel characters just make all these stupid ass decisions and just have to fight over it.
Do you ever wonder where all the villains are?
They're just kind of watching with popcorn, just like, yes, yes.
Green Goblin's on his glider outside the shield helicarrier with like just the rest of the Sinister Six.
Like,
look, they're fighting.
Excellent.
And now the Guardians of the Galaxy are coming.
Yeah.
And I guess this is actually like what breaks the Guardians apart again.
Is the whole conflict.
Yeah.
What surprises me the most is the Ultimates are still going to be together after all this. Like, I want to... Was it issue 3, I think, where they went in depth of the Thanos conflict? Or was it 2? I can't remember. It seemed like everybody was so conflicted in their team about it that I for sure thought they were going to break up after this. But
yeah.
Seems kind of odd.
Maybe, like, Ultimate Square, they all break... That first issue, they break up and bring a new team in.
Maybe. But it's still showing, like, the same exact team.
Yeah.
It's kind of odd, but... I don't know. It's just... like I said, it's frustrating to see one of my favorite characters get just... to be the villain of this whole conflict. I'm just like, you didn't have to do any of this. There were so many... I could point out multiple times where you could have just changed all of your actions and just believed Tony for once. But no, you had to be right. You just had to be fucking right this one time.
Just like Tony Stark in the original Civil War. Yep. It's funny because he's like, look, Steve and I, we were on opposite sides. I never want us to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've brought you all here.
Yeah, it's just like Tony is like, I don't want to do this, but you're pushing me into doing it again.
And it's kind of cool now, too, because in that last splash page of everyone about to fight each other, Tony's on Steve's side.
Yeah,
Steve's on Tony's side.
Which and is Kate's like, already on his side. So yeah. I'm wondering if I should have read the Choosing Sides issue first.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter? Okay. Nah. I figured that was her decision or something.
Yeah.
But
it's going to be... It's going to be an interesting
It's going to be a fight. And then Carol's going to realize, oh, God, what have I done?
Yeah.
We need to stop before she kills Tony.
I really want, like, again, I really want to know how all this dovetails back into, like, the Captain America main title.
Yeah.
Like, with Nick Spencer.
Yeah, just Steve, just like, so we've torn apart all the major characters.
We have set the foundation.
As he goes to talk to Red Skull or something.
Tony's not actual birth mother, thank goodness.
Please don't be Red Skull. Please don't be Red Skull. Grumble, grumble. Why do my favorite character has to be dumb and make decisions?
They're not always dumb.
But they're just making dumb decisions right now.
Yeah.
And it bothers me.
Tony Stark for life.
We're not doing this again. I've already agreed. Like, I've already agreed with you that Tony's right.
I know,
now.
I just tease you.
Because you don't care about Captain Marvel at all.
I like her as a character. She's wonderful.
This whole event, though.
I just find the entire thing funny. I just want to drive the joke into the ground.
Like you do.
Yep. Just like that Titanic resort.
We didn't really drive that into the ground so much as sink it into the ocean.
We just sank it. Using a giant iceberg of jokes. It's the Hemingway approach.
Yes.
Surface level, and then everything underneath it.
Yep. So let's talk about something other than Marvel for once. Let's talk about some Batgirl. What do you think of it? I really liked it. I thought it was a good representation of Barbara.
I love the art style, Raphael Albuquerque. And it's so bright.
Yeah, there's so many yellows and like just really bright colors.
Yeah. It's very much like you said, it's bringing Barbara back to her roots. I think she kind of escaped herself a lot in Burnside. Because it's like, I can appreciate life. I don't need this darkness. But yeah. She removes herself so far from what we know as Barbara Gordon, what we know as Batgirl, too.
She doesn't really know where she stands.
And like how the issue said, like this entire backpacking trip was like her road to self-discovery again,
mm-hmm.
which is really cool. And God, I just love the art because every time she's up in the air striking a pose, the cape is like very angular.
Mm-hmm.
And just the whole concept of Barbara using her detective skills, like using the math, trying to figure out what the best thing to do is.
Well, she continues on this trajectory. I can throw a batarang and hit her mid-flight.
Yeah.
And then freaking fruit bat, 104-year-old woman comes out of nowhere, throws this Japanese girl to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, God, that was brutal. That was awesome.
Yeah. And then her friend is there. It's like, look, I know you're Batgirl.
Yeah. It's like, what do you mean?
Yeah. I mean, there's no going around.
No, he doesn't. The way it's written, it's like, I know, Batgirl, it's you. It's like, what do you mean? No, Batgirl always follows you around.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
It's like the classic, it's the classic superhero trope.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course, Batgirl follows me around.
Yeah. So it's interesting because, again, I never really liked the Burnside too much. I said that last podcast multiple times.
I appreciated some parts of it for what it was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was. I still prefer Gail Simone.
Yeah, I prefer this change of pace where it's not necessarily her PTSD that's driving her. It's not necessarily her past that's driving her, but her on that road to self discovery again. Because mm-hmm. I feel like that's my
what
favorite
is the
Barbara
yeah like
Gordon
what
does
the
moments.
New Barbara mean? Like, and even the like the little call out to Oracle with when Fruit Bat was sitting in the wheelchair and she's like, mm-hmm. "Hey, I was in a wheelchair once, so I know what this is like."
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the woman get out of the wheelchair and deflect a knife with her bare hand.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
It's like some Naruto level stuff right there. But one of the things I really enjoyed, I love the solo characters. I love the Batman mm-hmm. sidekicks almost more than Batman himself. But I love the times where they need to move past like the tutelage of Batman to figure out their stance and their identity. And so Barbara's going on this world tour. She's going to Shanghai to find this teacher who's supposed to tell her some secrets and deal mm-hmm. with this woman in a kabuki makeup.
Right.
And so I feel like that character is actually going to be a good guy and that her friend is the bad guy.
Yeah. No, I mean,
classic trope.
She's already suspecting him. It's just like, why are you here?
I have to keep him close to
me. Why was he? Hey, it's like, hey, you want to go to Singapore? I can't wait to see her throw down with some martial arts people.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to actually like the new suit's starting to dig it, like, grow. I mean, now it's being like,
I like it better when other people draw it.
Yeah.
No offense to Babstar or anything, but like when Michael Yannon drew that suit in Grayson 14, I was like, oh my goodness, this looks amazing.
Yeah.
I still don't like the fact that her ears show underneath the cowl, though. That's like the one thing that bothers me. I don't like seeing superhero ears.
Right.
Like the Captain America helmet where his ears just stick out like an elephant. I'm like, no.
You know, I found funny is when her friend, I think his name's Kai, like comes in and is like, I know Batgirl. It's just like, she's the only redhead in Japan right now. How did you not connect, like, just one in one? How did you not just, like, Clark say Kent that logic. She wasn't?
Speed Force.
It's like, she's literally the only redhead in Japan right now.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
That you know of. Yeah. I feel like, you know, now that I'm watching a lot of these CW and the other DC shows, I feel like every person in the Bat family has, like, a voice modulator now.
Yeah.
Just because I'm like, how can you not tell? You've known this person since childhood.
Like, you can figure this out. It's not hard.
Yeah. Speaking of other Batman psychics, Nightwing issue 1 came out, too. Yeah. The first arc to Better Than Batman.
Yep.
Which
I feel like is more of the whole thing that Raptor said at the very end is everything Batman taught you is wrong.
Yeah. And that's what Tim Seeley was saying at like that Rebirth panel at WonderCon. Dick Grayson's going to come up to a force who believes that he is better than Batman, that he can do things better than the stuff Dick Grayson was taught. But at the same time, I'm like, the entire first part of that issue was Dick saying, my name is Dick Grayson. All my life, I've been a performer. Mm-hmm. So, like, what if he lost that fight on purpose? I mean, really? Yeah.
He gets, although getting, like, punched.
He gets crushed.
Yeah, just like, I've had the best sidekicks in the business. It's like, oh, really? Bam, right into a wall.
Yeah. But, again, Dick could be holding back at that point.
True.
Who knows? But it was just so cool. Finally, I love the way Tim Seeley writes Dick Grayson.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the way the artist on it draws everything other than like the suit's like really narrow. I like the thicker version like Brett Booth has, but like it's very inner monologue. It's very much Dick Grayson, who's spent so much time away from the role of Nightwing, so much time away from being who Dick Grayson is.
And everybody
is.
Keeps bringing that back up. It's like you, even Barbara is like, you're going undercover again. Like you haven't even had a chance to be Dick Grayson again.
They should have went on that date.
Yeah. That I did love so it. It's adorable. Like, is this not a date?
It was like,
I mean, it even Barbara's just like, I mean, I could go change. It could be.
And then Dick has his Nightwing suit on already, which is great. They're really giving the fans what they want. It's like, yeah, here's some Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon. Dubs.
Even That's though my they're literally planet. Like off on the other side of the planet.
Yeah.
Actually, he's in Russia. They're pretty close.
Russia
right
and
now.
Japan.
They're really close right now.
Yeah. But just the way Tim Seeley writes him is that detective character, that character who is a performer who needs to kind of find himself again. Mm-hmm. And then he's teamed up with the Parliament of Owls greatest assassin.
Yeah. And which I like that they explained it. It's like, I was like, wait, did the Court of Owls rebrand themselves? Like, oh no, that's the international version of the Court of Owls. Like, okay.
That killed Lincoln March.
Yeah.
And I think in the notes I wrote
the
weapon was.
Suyak?
Yeah. Raptor's dart weapon. Suyak. Okay. What was the definition again?
Suyak is a gypsy wizard who has the knowledge of every cure. He is chained to a big rock, and if he were to break free, he would destroy the entire world.
Yeah.
Solid. Makes sense that they're going to Russia, where like gypsy culture kind of originated in that kind of area.
Especially since Dick's family are Romani.
Yep.
They are the original gypsies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be really cool. I think one of the solicits for October, Dick finds Raptor's like secret hideout, and it's just like an entire wall of pictures of Dick Grayson.
What?
And it's like him as an acrobat, him as Robin, him as Nightwing, and like everything. And Dick is like, oh God, this man is obsessed with me.
I got a very him and Tiger, like Dick and Tiger vibe.
Okay.
Dick was trying to throw the jokes and like be witty with him and. But Raptor was having none of it.
I had a similar feeling to back when the Deathstroke thing, or like in the old school Dick Grayson, when he went by Renegade infiltrating the villains, he was teamed up with Deathstroke at that point. you know, a lot of Nightwing trips is that he goes undercover to do certain things, you know. But I feel like that's where the character kind of shines, is that he is this character who can go by many things, but he always returns back to his center.
Yeah.
Which is funny because of the little Russian doll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually
I get reminded of Rise of the Guardians with Sansa, where it's like the mean Sansa, the Builder Sansa, and then the tiny little one of Joy.
Yeah.
So it's a really cool trope. It's really cool visual imagery that he's, and then he just wants to be with Barbara. Come on.
Yeah. Do it.
Yeah. Do it. Alrighty.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Pokemon Go at all?
No.
Okay.
Pokemon Go is just, we're on the verge of all sounding childish because of everything in the last update. I just feel like we should move on.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, that was every kind of the bit of the news. So let's have the little promo, and then we will have a little discussion.
Yep, sounds good.
That was all the news that happened this week.
This episode of the Z2 Podcast would like to promote Hall of Justice Comics and Collectibles located in Parker, Colorado. For more information, you can visit their Facebook at Hall of Justice Comics and Collectibles or Twitter at HOJ Comics. Their store has many amazing things ranging from comics, pop figures, collectibles, action figures, and much more. For more information, you can follow those two links and have a wonderful day.
So we were recording. Yeah. Welcome back to that lovely intro.
I didn't know we were recording.
I was just letting it happen. It's like, see if he notices or not.
Well, you were staring at me. I'm like, is he waiting for me to stop? Or
no, I was gonna see how long that went. So welcome everybody.
Welcome back.
So our little discussion topic today we wanted to talk about was what writers do when they're writing their best, or like which characters are like kind of tropes that they write.
Yeah, best. What characters shine the most under a writer?
Because for a while, at least for the last like year and a half, I've had a beef with Scott Lobdell writing Red Hood and the way he writes him. And at least in the Rebirth issue, it was actually a good Jason issue, which surprised me very much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't do the whole, I'm Red Hood, this is who I am. It's more of his relationship to Batman and what that means to him.
Why don't you trust me?
Yeah, that line, I was like, ooh, that was actually a good line. Like, do you actually like write Red Hood well now? I'm still going to, like you said, I'm probably going to sit on those couple issues and get some feedback from other people that have read it and see what they actually think.
Yeah. But what you're saying along with that, you know, I was the one who kind of kept bugging you. I'm like, you should read it. You should read it. You're the only one that's going to read this because I'm not. Because Jason's like your character, kind of in the same way like Dick and Damian are the guys.
Because I feel like he has a lot. I feel like he has a lot of potential that just isn't explored that often.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've noticed the most is that Jason Todd as a character shines the most when he is presented not necessarily as an anti-hero, but as like the black sheep of the Bat family. It's amazing and it's really awesome when he's brought into the fold, like when Peter Tomasi brought him to retrieve Damian from Apocalypse, or when Tynan and that team brought Jason in for Eternal. But this character, like you said, a lot of people aren't really sure what to do with him because he is the Robin that was killed. He was the Robin that is the angry one. He's this character who exists on a level.
He always went too far.
Yeah,
he always tried to do the right thing, but he always went too far.
Yeah, except lately he wants to be brought back in. Like, he's coming back into the fold as the Bat family, but his relationship with Bruce
is still very shaky.
Yeah.
Like, especially the Rebirth issue. He, like you said, you think Lobdell writes Jason, a very antagonistic Jason, well, which I would tend to agree, like, because we've seen Tynan more. He's very much the black sheep of the family. He's always the snarky one, but he's willing to work with the Bat family, with Tynan writing him, and work as a team. Lobdell's always been like, I'm Jason Todd. Like, Batman doesn't respect me. I got to do my own thing.
I'm an outlaw.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, just again, continuing on that look at Jason, you know, I think to a degree, Batman shouldn't trust him.
Well, I mean, because, even like, Batman's line is like, the minute I see you go too far, I'm taking you out.
Yeah. Which is fair because Batman does that with everyone. But, you know, Jason has these really warm memories of Batman as a father figure, but he can't move past that. He's, if I go too far, he's going to stop me.
Right.
And it's because Jason has that darkness, whether it be like the Lazarus Pits, whether it be the Joker, whether it be anything that really has corrupted him from his youth to now. You know, for a while, Lobdell like retconned the Joker being the one who turned Jason Todd into Robin, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, this character really, he exists on another level that I don't think a lot of people really write him at. You know, Tynan does a pretty decent job because he writes Jason more as a morally gray character. That's a supporting character.
But he still tries to do good.
Yeah.
But he, not, like I said, he takes it too far sometimes.
I think it's just the fact that he carries guns all the time, even though they're non-lethal now, versus like at the beginning of Outlaws where he just kills people he's left and right.
Shooting up thugs.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that they brought back the style of suit that I prefer. Like the kind of the motorcycle helmet with the leather jacket, like none of the dumb face mask kind of thing. I absolutely hate that. So I'm like, at least the design is good. I appreciate that part at least.
The art was beautiful.
Yeah, the art was really good. Like, I actually liked that a lot.
Yeah. I just, the end really killed me because I didn't buy the issue. I just read like a few scans and an essay on it. But, you know, Jason has like the family photo, or him and Bruce, their first photo together as Batman and Robin next to like his helmet, next to like all these books.
Yeah.
You know, it really shows that even though he's this black sheep, he really cares about these other people.
Yeah, or the line, like, someday Batman will realize I'm the one he needs.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm some along those lines. I can't remember the exact line.
Yeah. You know, he called for when he got reintroduced, he always referred to Tim as, like, replacement. Like, he was never Robin. And I guess, you know, with the rebirth, everything.
I mean, even really in his, like, back. I mean, even in his first incarnation, he was always the. Like, even Barbara called him out, like, you'll never be Dick Grayson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's kind of what he's always been portrayed as, is, like, not really his own Robin.
I think he was the replacement.
Yeah. I think that's always what he's been trying to do as Red Hood, is, what am I?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he still doesn't seem to know.
And now he's going into this fold where he's delving into this, like, criminal organization with the dark trinity of Artemis and Bizarro.
I think that's kind of what, at least right now, Lobdell's trying to do, is like define Jason as like the guy who will go and do these things that literally Batman cannot do. Like, mm-hmm. he can't go undercover in these certain situations because he's never had that gray past to do.
But he's Matches Malone. Or Agent Malone.
Yeah.
Sorry, I love Matches Malone. He's my favorite character.
His favorite alias.
My favorite Grant Morrison bits. But yeah, it's cool. And, you know, some of the other characters, you know, you started typing out a list of, like, where characters really shine the most. And
what writers.
Yeah.
Like, Jeff Johns is the king of internal narration.
Yeah.
Like, no. Like, I feel like, I think we talked about it before, but that we both agree, like, that was what was missing from the first Justice League.
Yeah,
issue from Brian Hedges is like there's no thought of like what's happening. Yeah, it's just all action and reaction lines.
And going to Scott Snyder, you know, he's written Batman for so long now, but his Batman is very different from other Batmans. It's very different from Jeff Johns or Grant Morrison's because Scott inherently creates this darkness that Batman goes up against. You know, it's very much that essay topic of Batman gets up in the morning to fight insurmountable odds so you can take the smallest steps that you need to. And I feel like that's where Scott Snyder shines as a writer. You know, he creates these characters that instill hope. And especially with the Jim Gordon Batman, a lot of people are like, oh, F this. This is dumb. And Jim Bats was actually really cool because it's one of those characters that was inspired by the original Batman.
Yeah, and now he has to experience what Batman always experienced.
Mm-hmm. And Snyder's tropes of villains is that all of his villains have this very horror-esque aspect to them. The Court of Owls, the shady organization, the Joker forever, the Riddler working on things behind the scenes when Bruce thought he was already dealing with an enemy. And then Mr. Bloom, holy crap, that was
just
body horror. Literally laying
the seeds.
Yeah, just being in the background the entire time. And we still don't know who Mr. Bloom is the thing. He's like the Joker who...
They like kind of reveal it's like it was Duke's brother, but it really wasn't. Duke's brother just kind of...
Not Duke's brother, his friend.
Oh, was his friend? I thought it was his brother.
No, nah, it was his friend from like the same foundation they were a part of. But his friend was the original Bloom. He created Bloom seed. Mm-hmm. And then we don't really know who the original Bloom is. And then they revealed
that he didn't even really do that. It was the other guy. Yeah. Or the other guy who took it from him.
Mm-hmm. He was like, I gave it to my cousin without work. And then someone else came. Like Bloom himself was like the things in Gotham that you don't want to see. And that's what really drove it home is like that aspect of horror. It's like, you know, Batman's off doing all these big things. He's dealing with the Penguin, the Riddler, the Joker. But in the deepest parts of Gotham where people don't look, there's something even worse that even Batman's not aware of. Which, you know, that's such a really cool trope. And just that horror aspect itself, you know, he carries it into American Vampire, which is, you know, everything else that he writes, The Wake especially.
Right. This was kind of, this actually kind of like worked, it was more, I guess, convenient. There was this article about, called Everybody's Paying Attention to Captain America When They Really Should Be Paying Attention to The Fix by Nick Spencer. And it's kind of that goes along with that idea of Nick Spencer. He kind of struggles with, at least what this anecdote kind of is explaining, like Nick Spencer's kind of struggling with like what to do with Captain America, like because he has to deal with all the backstory, he has to deal with a already created character, while with the Fix he has this whole world that he gets to create and mess with, like he can choose what he wants to do with it exactly. And I feel like a lot of writers, or I mean you can even see this with like Morning Glories, like if this was like an established superhero title that he was trying to write, the storyline of Morning Glories, like that would never work.
Yeah,
like because there's just too many things tying it into it.
Yeah, and it goes back to that argument. It's like a lot of people will end up dropping off a book when another writer takes over, or they'll jump back on when a new writer takes over because they like these characters and they want to see these characters at their best, but the writer or the artist or whoever may not, you know, give that reader the attention that they want in 23 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Like me, the first title I ever dropped was The New 52 Teen Titans. Again, Scott Lobdell.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't like the way that he wrote Robin, Tim Drake. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the way he wrote Cass. And because I was so used to the Jeff Johns Teen Titans, or the... just like those animated incarnations of them, because I believe that those were that was the way that I first respected those characters. And then when Pfeiffer took over, it was cool. I kind of picked it up again, read a few issues, but dropped off because it wasn't what I wanted.
Right.
And, you know, it goes a lot to say that, you know, a lot of these characters have been established for 50, 75 years, and the writer has to deal with a lot of fan hopes, dreams, promises that they've gotten with those different incarnations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, I loved Scott Snyder Batman. I like the Tom King Batman, but it's very much different.
It's very different. I have to
accept that as a reader, even though it's the same incarnation of this character moving from one point to the next point. Or like, you know, my dislike of Batgirl of Burnside. You know, I wrote off such a high with Gail Simone's Batgirl. And then getting to have this character who gets to do these new, fun, different things, that's great. But if I felt like this isn't the Barbara Gordon that I deserved, I read every single issue of Burnside. Did I like all of it? Not really. But it was still an entertaining story to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But it would typically be like the last thing sitting on the pile of my stack to read.
Right. I mean, and that's like, it's kind of interesting, especially with like something like Green Arrow, like Ben Percy, he wrote an arc of Green Arrow before the Rebirth. Like, and it was okay, I didn't, but it was just like, it's just kind of a standard, just kind of Ollie trying to explore, like figure out what's going on with himself.
Right.
But then you throw in Dinah Lance into his writing and it becomes this whole thing. Like it becomes mm-hmm. so much more elaborate and like really thought out, and it really explores the character more because it has that really solid foundation of Dinah in there as well.
Andy Corey, you know, he deleted his tweet, but he's the Green Arrow group editor. And he said, it's like, yeah, you can write a standalone Black Canary, but you can't really write a standalone Oliver Queen, that Green Arrow, without having his supporting cast, without having Dinah Lance. You know, Green Arrow is kind of boring because it's just him driving his way, his force home. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have those supporting characters that are like, Ollie, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, it's cool. And like, especially even now, like Green Arrow issue 3 came out last week. And Dinah's like on a war path right now. And then
yeah, she's like, Emiko is like, I don't believe this is
leverage.
Yeah. I still don't think that whole storyline. I believe Emiko's just trying to play them at this
point. I just don't want her to die.
I don't think she will. Like Emiko's become such a like fat, like key character in all the whole Green Arrow storyline. Mm-hmm. I feel like they can't kill her off. If anyone dies, I imagine it'd be Shadow again.
Yeah.
Cause she died already once.
Was that in Lemire's story?
That was in Lemire's, like the end of it.
Yeah, it's very cool to see, because again, I don't read Green Arrow, but then I read Rebirth. I'm like, holy crap, what have I been missing all these years?
Yeah, this is a really good Green Arrow story so far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just like I said, like it's just so interesting. It's just like, what if Dinah was there from the very beginning? Well, people have jumped onto this like back when he first got onto the book.
What if Dinah was there during Lemire's run?
Oh my god.
Would Lemire have ever left DC?
Yeah. I don't know. It'd be kind of crazy. It's one of those things. It's like the Lemire Green Arrow was like, that was a very good, like, standalone Ollie story.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, he brought in that, but he did have that supporting cast, which helped.
Yeah. It's always that, like I said, it's always the supporting cast that really drives a character home for you. Mm-hmm. Like, to have a Superman character without Lois Lane would be.
Or Jimmy.
Yeah, it just feels empty. Mm. Or having a Superman book without Lana or Steel or any of those guys. You know, that's one of the things I appreciate about the Superman standard title by Patrick Gleason and Peter Tomasi. Mm-hmm. And then Action Comics by Dan Jurgens. Like, they feature two different supporting casts that foil the character of Superman for a way the audience to understand him. Like in Action Comics, they're fighting Doomsday with Lex Luthor and Wonder Woman, and then in Superman, it's Superman, John, and Lois the entire time. You know, it really informs the reader of this Superman is different for different reasons, but we should still accept him as a character because he is still what the embodiment of Superman is.
Right.
Like, that goes along with my, kind of our feeling about Gene Luen Yang's run.
Yeah.
It was because this Superman, he was by himself.
Like, Jimmy didn't come in until like the very end.
And Lois was MIA for most of it. You know, this was a Superman that was treated as an outsider, but that's not something that people inherently think Superman is. Yes, he's an outsider. He is an alien. And I think, Max Landis wrote that better in American Alien, mm-hmm. because this was a Superman who still had a supporting cast that really taught us about who he is as a young Superman going into his adult life.
Right.
It's crazy because a lot of these characters can be really hit or miss. You can stick a right. People think you could stick Geoff Johns on any book and things would soar, and they're right. But some characters and some writers who write really fantastic characters don't do well in other mediums. Like, I love Jeff Lemire's Hawkeye. I love Jeff Lemire in Sweet Tooth. Like, those characters are really cool, but reading Extraordinary X-Men, I'm like, oh, this is cool. It's Jeff Lemire on an X-Men tie with Old Man Logan and Teenage Jean Grey. I wasn't really on board. I read the first arc in its entirety, but it was something about the Marvel Universe at that time that these characters didn't really stick with me. I didn't like the Old Man Logan in Extraordinary X-Men, but I read Old Man Logan standalone series by the same exact writer and appreciate that a lot more.
Yeah. It's this guy. Yeah. It's always interesting. It's like, And it kind of goes along with, like, some writers write solo books way better than they write team books. Like, I'm trying to think. There's an example I'm trying to think of that really fit this well. Crap. I feel like you might know what I'm talking about.
Just tell me the book.
I can't. I'm trying to think of the book name.
Scott Lobdell. And Redhead and the Outlaws.
Oh, I would say Mark Waid. Yeah. He's actually a good example of that. Like, his Avengers stuff, like, it was okay, but I didn't really think of it. And then I'm reading his co-written Black Widow, and that's been such a more interesting book. Because I feel like he writes solo characters way better than a team book.
Yeah, dude, Archie was so much better than the Avengers. Yeah. I read Archie. But, yeah, Mark Waid, his 90s Flash is, like, the pinnacle.
Yeah, everybody praises that book. Yeah,
it's the Grant Morrison, Mark Waid, and Geoff Johns Flash that everyone redirects you to if you want to read more Flash. Mm-hmm. But reading his Avengers, I'm like, oh, I love Miles Morales. I love Kamala. I love this incarnation, Nova, Vision, Tony Stark, and Captain America. These are all really cool legacy characters. I forgot Thor. But reading that, I'm like, not everyone gets enough spotlight. And, you know, I didn't appreciate that story as much as I could have because it was very reactionary to an event that what happened in Thor that everyone else is trying to catch up on. And then something happens to Vision that was appeared in like the Avengers Zero issue that came out during Secret Wars. And it's like, there's so much you need to know to truly appreciate the entire thing.
Right.
That bothered me.
Right. I mean, even kind of going along with the Flash, like, I feel like Joshua Williamson, the current Flash writer, could potentially, like, go down as one of those storylines that people direct you to when you read the Flash.
Oh, like, God, Godspeed.
It's been such a cool storyline so far. Like, and it's very much, like, something I felt like that was missing from, like, the Brett Boot. Yeah, no, the Van Jensen stuff was like
Venditti.
It was very focused on like the villains the whole time, like, and Barry was just like, oh man, what, I'm being like tested at my very limits, like, what do I do in this situation?
But now Barry's now, the teacher.
Yeah, now Barry can actually like focus on what does it mean to be the Flash with all these other people, like, that want, that these have these powers, like, some don't want them, some want to. His partner is a good example. Is like, he's like, I have these powers too now, I can help you, like, I can be a sidekick for you.
But he's like, August, you don't do things the right way.
Yeah.
And it's,
you don't know what it means to be the Flash.
Yeah, it's really cool because then you get other like little small moments in time. You get like those Wally moments.
Yeah.
He's like, I need to be the fastest kid alive. You have those moments with Iris. You have, and then, you know, Williamson's just writing style. Everything is, and his artist, I can't remember his name on the top of my head.
It's a really long name.
Italian name. But everything is so dynamic. Even all the still frames, it seems like everyone's ready to move off the page that I really appreciate. And just the fact that this Flash run, it's like, yeah, there's a speed storm and all these civilians.
Now they have access to the Speed Force.
And he's like, I don't know if I was just like a straight kid, but, you know, it never once crossed my mind to be a criminal, you know, to use these powers for something else.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they arrest the three other speedsters and they go to Star Labs where they're training other speeds. I was this close to expecting Wells to pop up. I'm Cisco? Like, oh,
what if Cisco showed up?
Yeah. Oh my Vibe. God. We haven't seen Vibe
yeah,
in
we haven't
ages.
Seen Vibe in forever.
And I was just sitting there. I'm like, okay, they're bringing Star Labs. Please don't be like the TV show. And it's not. It's this.
It's very different
place where they're training everyone to use their powers. And just that moment with Barry talking to that one girl, it's like, you know, that emotional support of being the Flash. It's like, turn your hand into a fist, lift each finger up with something that you love, and that brings you back. It doesn't let the Speed Force take you away. And I'm like, that's just such a Geoff Johnsian moment. Mm-hmm. Like, this is my first Flash ongoing book. Like, I read the Francis Manipal run, and I bugged you the entire time when Venditti and Van Jensen were writing.
Yeah.
But, like, this is the first one that I fully came on board with because it's a superhero in that teacher role, the facilitator who's trying to deal with too many problems at once. That character who's like, I need to do everything, but maybe I don't have to anymore.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad they brought him, when they let him write. Because he came to me and he's like, hey, I have this really cool Flash story I want to write. will you please let me write it?
Yeah.
I'm really glad they're letting him do it.
Because
it's been so good.
He's a guy that's been on Image for years. He writes horror stories, and now we get something different out of the blue from him. And then, like, his Vertigo thing is going to be something like that, horror-esque.
Yeah.
But I feel like Godspeed, who's like this evil speedster, is going to do something different for The Flash. Even the Rogues are like, well, it's time to move out of Central City, boys.
let's screw this. One Flash was enough. We can't have enough vendettas against all of these guys.
Mm-hmm. I'm
trying to think of what
else. What about Green Lantern for you? Because you're new to the Green Lantern.
I'm pretty new to Green Lantern. I've been really liking the Sam Humphreys Green Lantern series. Because he's, at least from what I can tell, he's trying to, like, specifically with, like, I guess both of them, really. It's just, like, they both have different ideas of what it means to be Green Lantern. Jessica still doesn't know what the frick she's doing half the time. But I still, like, identify with her a lot, because she's still, like, maybe I can do this, or maybe I can't. Like, she's still wavering. And then Simon's just like, I was chosen for a reason. But he's like, what is my reason? Oh, like, why did the ring pick me? Mm-hmm. I feel like that's always kind of something that they draw back to a lot. And maybe even with, like, Hal Jordan sometimes, it's just like, or even Kyle, it's just like, why was I picked to be a Green Lantern? Like, what did it see in me?
Yeah. Well, Kyle's the weirdest one, too, because it wasn't the ring that chose him.
Right, didn't he pick up the ring? Like, it was more of, like, happenstance or something?
Ganneth? I swear someone's yelling at me. I'm getting a name wrong. But he was the last living guardian who came to Earth and gave Kyle the ring.
He's like, I got nothing else. Take it.
And it's like, Kyle Rayner, you possess the ability to overcome great fear or whatever. And it's like, it wasn't the ring that specifically sought him out. It was the singular person. Mm-hmm. Because Kyle was the only living Green Lantern at the time. He had the entire embodiment of the Green Lantern power at that time.
Yeah.
And now, you know, Hal Jordan's the same way. He is the living embodiment of Will, who forged his own Green Lantern ring in his Rebirth issue, which is just so metal.
Yeah.
And now he's bringing back the rest of the core from the edge of oblivion.
Right.
It's crazy. Because there's so many good tropes that are happening in these stories where a lot of the main superheroes are in the roles of facilitators. They are the teachers. Superman is teaching John.
Mm-hmm.
Batman is teaching Kate and the rest of that team, and Detective.
And Duke.
Hal is teaching Simon and Jessica and bringing the core back to life. And then you have a lot of those sidekick characters, the partners, who are on that road to self-discovery across all the titles. Mm-hmm. Batgirl, figuring out who's Barbara Gordon. Dick Grayson going undercover with Raptor.
Jason Todd.
Into the Dark Trinity. Yeah. You know, the Teen Titans trying to go out and
defeat
Ra's al Ghul.
Tim Drake. Like, he still doesn't know if he wants to be Red Robin still.
Yeah. And it's just curious because it's like all these main characters are the teachers. And then all of your sidekicks are they're on this kind of quest for self-discovery. They know who they are, but what does it mean to be that?
Yeah.
And then Titans especially. It's like, we lost our memories. We lost our time together. We want it back more than anything. And Titans gave me this huge smile this week.
Yeah. Oh my God. I love Donna.
Yeah. This is the first time Donna's been written like that since Jeff Johns' period.
Was she always like this? I don't remember this. She's so happy.
Yeah. She's not the embodiment of war in the Finches run anymore. You know, this is the Donna that reminds me of Jeff Johns' Teen Titans period, where she is the motherly figure who isn't afraid to joke around. She's like, Dick Grayson's best friend.
It's like, oh, well, he's in love. It's like, what? This is so different from, like, Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Even Wonder Woman. Yeah, she's on that road to self-discovery right now.
Like, what is real with... What is my actual origin? Like, I don't even know anymore.
I was giving Cassandra's origin, Cassie's origin, in the New 52. Well, I mean, Cassie is the daughter of Zeus.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's cool, and it's just really interesting to see this period of time where we know where all these characters came from for the most part, but now these characters want to figure out why they came from that or what it means that they were born into this. It always goes back to my Batman approach, that approach in Eternal. Dick Grayson is the perfect embodiment of Batman. Jason Todd is what Batman should fight like. Tim Drake is the intelligence of Batman.
He's the detective.
Damian, I want you to choose. I'm not going to force you, but you need to figure out who you are more than anything. You're not a Robin. You're not a Batman. You are Damian Wayne first and foremost, which is just one of those moments. It's like, man, this character lives up to this monumental legacy. What if he doesn't choose to be Batman? What if he doesn't choose to be the assassin? What if he chooses to be Nightwing once Dick Grayson moves on to that role? Or what if he moves on to
Hold on. What was... I forget what the other character is that Superman tells Dick Grayson. It's Nightwing. Flamebird. Flamebird? What if he becomes Flamebird?
We already have Flamebird.
Damn it.
She was in J.H. Williams' run of Batwoman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn it. That would have been kind of cool. She's
Bat Kane.
Oh, okay.
Kate Kane's niece.
Okay.
Yeah, she's always been that. She was also the original Batgirl, but...
She hasn't been around for a while.
Not since J.H. Williams' run of Batwoman. But, you know, there's a lot of these tropes about these characters that they are all, and I mean, this is what Marvel lacks more than anything. They lack that aspect of legacy more than anything.
I feel like that's what they're trying to do right now. Mm-hmm. Definitely is like, but they're still, it's very shaky. Like something I loved about Ms. Marvel and the last issue of Ms. Marvel kind of killed that whole idea of legacy is Kamala looked up to Carol so much. Like, she was her hero, and she wanted to be Miss Marvel for one of those reasons. Like, I can be like my hero. Like, I can, but I'm still me. Like, this is what I'm fighting for. Like, and now that kind of killed it. It was like her hero is now shaming her.
Kamala, you need to be the one that brings them in line. But who's going to bring you in line, Carol? It's just like one of those, again, that aspect of legacy, the aspect of,
or Peter Miles is probably the best example that Marvel's done with that,
other than like Tony and Rhodey, or Steve and Bucky,
or I guess Jane and Odinson
to a degree,
a little bit.
Miles and Peter have that best relationship. You know, Miles is like, do you want me to still be Spider-Man? I can pick another name, I could do something else. And Peter's like, no, you are Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
More than anything, you know, you deserve that title just as much as I do, which is like, it's cool. But, you know, Marvel lacks that diversity in younger characters who grew up alongside other characters. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what makes Peter Parker such an interesting character, because he's been in the hero gig since he was in high school.
Right.
He's been the one to go up to other people and say like, hey, I've been through what you're doing before. Here's how I've dealt with it. Or it's like, listen, I'm here to help you. Like, he became that teacher in Spider-Man and the X-Men, or he's there for Miles. He's there in multiple roles other than just being business conglomerate Peter Parker now.
Yeah. Or even Kate and like Clint, like they were always like partners, but now Kate's starting to realize that she doesn't need Clint. Clint needs her.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of she's becoming the teacher more so than he is, which is kind of interesting. Like, especially since she comes from like a rich family that worked with, her dad worked with like mobsters and stuff and shady stuff, but she always like didn't want to be associated with that. She didn't want to be the rich girl. She was always trying to be her own person.
And that that kind of brings me to another point where the Avengers now, you know, Kamala, Sam and Miles are leaving the Avengers to do their own thing as the champions. You know, after the huge mess that's going to happen with Civil War, they're going to need to find their own identity apart from these characters that they grew up with.
Yeah.
Or these ideologies that were thrust upon them, essentially.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is.
Legacy and, you know, just those character tropes.
What makes characters great?
Yeah.
Or at least what we think makes the characters great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you guys have some sort of, you have different thoughts about this, or you think that, there's a character that it's a good example of like two different versions that's written well, like, let us know. Comment.
Yeah. I mean, those rebirth things, not even like the rebirth as a whole, but like Green Lantern rebirth from like 2008 showed us Hal Jordan, man, he was pretty awesome.
Before he went crazy.
No, that was after he went crazy.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, he went crazy, but that's not really who Al Jordan. That's not who Al Jordan is.
He was the Spectre for a long time, but he's not that guy anymore.
He doesn't have parallax in him.
Yeah. So, yeah, characters are weird, man. And yeah. I think that's what makes them great. Because I've been, like, rolling around ideas in my head for... I just have, like, specific instances of these characters existing. All the thoughts inside my head because I'm going mentally insane as the school year approaches quickly now. And it's like, wait, I want to do all these things. I want to write something. And it's just fascinating to, you know, try and understand these characters more than anything.
Right.
And yeah. I'm going insane. So, yeah. Whatever.
We both are. I feel you. But, yeah. I think that's going to do it for episode 20 of the Z2 Podcast.
Woohoo!
As always, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, both at Z2 Podcast. You can get all sorts of updates from there. We've been posting a lot of stuff, side content and whatnot. I'm kind of looking into maybe starting a Patreon. Still on the fence if we want to do that now or wait. But we'll let you know if that goes live or whatnot, if you want to help support us. I'm trying to... I think that's, as always,
you can go also on our Facebook, and the like sticky pinned post on the top right now is the first article that I wrote for the section I'm just calling Empty Pages, and it deals a lot with the tropes that we just talked about, that concept of legacy. Yeah, if you read it, give it a chance, let me know. I'm just practicing my writing chops again. I plan on doing one of those like every other week. I think I'm supposed to do one this week, actually.
No, is it? I don't know. That's up to you. That's your whole thing.
That's my side of the content.
Yeah.
So it's an extra side content just to like get inside our heads a little bit more. And it's all about legacy within DC and Marvel, especially talking a lot about Batman because he's the most important thing in the world. Yeah.
He drives us a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you haven't already, go give us a review/rating. Wherever you listen to this, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, whatnot. But yeah, I think it's going to do.
We're going to also going to do an episode with Thinking Outside the Long Box.
You come
next
out,
month.
Yeah, like a couple weeks.
Yeah, we're going to be playing some Super Fight with them and then just talking.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll
be
fun.
We'll probably be on their episode whenever that comes out.
Yep. I'm trying to think of anything else. I think we're just dragging the stick through the mud right now.
I think we got everything.
Do we have everything?
I think so.
Do we get the Red Bull?
Not sponsored by Red Bull. That's Spike.
Yeah. All right. Z2 Podcast is out.
Be gone.
Love you, Internet.